Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
Alright, welcome back to another episode of The Gleeman's Apprentice. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I'm his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
We are in the middle of, not quite the middle, of Shadow Rising.
Still not quite at this point.
And today we are ambitious. We're going to record
24 and 25.
Well, we're going to record all three chapters, 24, 25, 26. Ruidian, Road to the Spear, and The Dedicated. We might stop after
25
and then add 26 as its own separate episode, depending on how we're looking. But before we do that, how are you doing?
Good. I had a night where I went camping. We kayaked to an island, portaged to a lake on the island, and then kayaked to a campsite. So I have kayaked on a lake, on an island, on a lake. How's that?
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Then I came back this morning, so I'm a little tired. A little tired. But doing good. It was on my bucket list, so I did it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
How are you?
Good. We had a fun weekend. Of course, you guys would have already heard the episode a little over a week ago, but we were on Fantasy for the Ages this past week, talking all about book two, the Great Hunt, and that was a lot of fun.
Good people, Fantasy of the Ages, go listen.
This community is strong. We all like, sharing content with each other. So, but with all of that out of the way, should we just go ahead and jump into
your
cat notes?
We got a lot. We're jumping into Cat Notes, Chapter 24, Ruidian. This is Matt's saga. So Matt's perspective, right?
Matt, yep.
Your buddy Matt, he and Rand are entering Ruidian. They're sunburned and parched, and they're not quite to the, they're at the fog wall, not in the fog wall.
Yeah, they're approaching the fog wall, yep.
Matt's just like, Rand, I saw Avienda running past us naked. But, of course, Rand saw nothing because he's only been staring straight ahead at the city in the clouds. And he's like, she probably wouldn't do that, bud.
Yeah, he's like, that just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So, because, remember, they left before the girls.
They did. And why would she be running Nikki? And they're, and Matt's going, my feet are blistering.
Exactly. He's like, in this heat, she's naked? Yeah. God, my feet hurt and I have boots and socks and all that jazz.
So they approach the dense fog, and I appreciate Matt assumes this must be using power to keep the fog so dense just in this spot, because I hadn't really thought about that, and it's really unsettling to him.
Is it the power? Like, that's
or is it the ghost? I don't know.
Anyways, it seems like it's been there for a long time. So
I just appreciate he thought about it.
Oh, yeah. Matt's constantly thinking about, like, the power.
He is a thinker.
He hates the power. Anything that he might even kind of be associated with the power, he hates.
He's associated with it, with his Taverin-ness almost. Okay, Rand's determined to enter, even though Matt's hesitant, and Matt's whining a bit about the snaky people. Yeah, even if the Snakey people are right with their predictions, there's no actual need for us to enter Iridian. And I thought this was great because Rand just gives him a funny look and he's like, the Snakey people didn't tell me to come to Iridian.
Nope.
So there you have it. Not. That is not part of what Rand learned from the Snakey people.
Well, and this is the first time, as far as we know, that Rand got confirmation that what Matt said in the dungeons of the Son of Tyr was a complete falsehood, right? Like, this is the first time that Rand's... I mean, he suspected, of course, that Matt was lying when he was like, oh, they didn't tell me anything. Oh, yeah. I didn't understand them at all. And now he's like, oh, so you actually did talk to him.
And it confirms, too, Rand was actually reading all those manuscripts we saw in his bedroom in the stone. There were a ton of books when the girls visited him. And we've already learned he used the manuscripts and library to find the portal stones. And now it's like, that is probably how he knew...
Yeah. About
the prophecy of the dragon, essentially. So.
Yeah. So I'm just curious. Do you have any predictions? I think I already asked you this once, but do you have any predictions on what what questions Rand asked?
Don't you wish it was something like, "Who will I sleep with first, Elaine or Lanfear?"
Do I get more than one?
Or both at the same time? predictions. I would think it's something about being the dragon. I would assume he has something that's very, very vague because I don't know what thing.
Well, yeah.
I'd make an assumption there was a something about being the dragon.
Am I the dragon? Am I really? You know?
Yeah, it could have been.
But we also know that flipping questions and questions that too closely touch the shadow. So I don't know if that would have been a flipping question. Anyways, let's move on. I was just curious.
Okay, so, it's funny. Even in my notes, I said, I don't think we've had a true hint of what Snakey people told Rand.
Yeah.
So Matt's thinking to himself, well, if I find the Snakey people again, I'm demanding answers, whatever it takes.
I'm going to wring their skinny little necks.
But
blood and bloody ashes.
Rand just goes directly into the fog, leaving Matt behind, who hesitates for only a moment before following as well. And it really is thick. He can't see his own hand, but suddenly he's through it. Like, they are actually... It's just a dome made by the thick fog. And it's an actual city.
I'd like to take a second to appreciate the shock of what he just...
Did?
You know, experienced. Because he was in this extremely dry heat, like Death Arid Valley, hot. You know, no humidity. And it's probably 120 degrees... Fahrenheit.
Haven't had water all morning. Yeah,
exactly. And all of a sudden he walks into like this dense wall of humidity, right? And it wasn't much cooler, but it was humid. And all of a sudden you got this flash of hot, like, moisture. It couldn't have been pleasant. That's all I'm saying.
No, and creepy. You know, if you can't see your own hand, and I'm guessing you couldn't hear Rand, it's probably pretty creepy. But he made it through, and it's a city, and it's an empty city. There's immense buildings and palaces and crystal and glass and what looks like completely unfinished buildings.
Yeah.
Possible spots where trees once grew, and there's also fountains. And so I just made a note. That makes me just think of Rome. So in my head, this is a broken Rome.
Yeah, that's always kind of where I... And he specifically mentions, like, the cities that he's seen prior to this, like Tyr and... Tarvalin and Camelin, they all were extremely grand, but they also had like their slums, their smaller buildings, their warehouses, stuff like this. This doesn't have any of that. This is strictly like high end, you know, Hollywood Hills type shit, right? This is not. There weren't a lot of. It doesn't seem like there was much. Common folk in this area. Everybody was rich who lived here.
And unfinished buildings pretty much meaning like they're still being built upon, right? They weren't broken in a war, it's just they're not finished.
Exactly. They were just never built. Yeah.
Okay. Rand is muttering, I should have thought of this before. And then boom, water begins flowing from a fountain. So Matt just automatically jumps in, totally clothed, drinking, getting wet. And Rand just begins laughing and laughing, kind of maniacally.
Yeah.
Rand says, They said no water could be brought into the city, but nothing about using water once inside.
Yeah.
And it takes Matt reminding Rand, hey, you gonna drink, buddy? And Rand does, but Matt's just feeling, would Rand have stopped laughing if I had not reminded him, you gotta drink some water, bud?
Well, and it's a funny little thought that he gives himself right now, too. And because as soon as the water happens, he, without a thought, he just jumps in.
Yeah, he did.
Right? And he's so happy to have the water. I sympathize with him. I would be right on that level. It takes him a second to realize that, oh, this was made with the power. You know what I mean? Rand did this with the power. Shit. Yeah.
And I did have a moment to...
Bloody ashes.
Because he's so bothered about the power. And it was hard for me to find the exact words, but Matt keeps running into these moments where he can't trust Rand because of his ability to channel. But to me, it feels like stopping your entire friendship because you found out something about their heritage beyond their control.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, I just found out my best friend of, 17 years had a grandma from, whatever country. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That doesn't change your friend.
No,
mixed feelings.
Yeah. No, I I've known people that like stop being friends with somebody else or even family because they found out something, whether it becoming like they love the wrong person, Romeo and Juliet type style, or you can go into all
reasons.
Yep.
Rand is stepping out of the fountain and talking about finding the heart of the city that the wise ones told him about, which is in Rhuidean. And then he's explaining, there's an ocean of water beneath the city. It's super deep. He had to really dig to find it. So he pauses the water, not wanting to waste it. Good sustainability, Rand.
Yeah.
And saying they can stop on their way back, which of course, doesn't that just sound like famous last words? Like,
oh, yeah.
Are you going to find the fountain on your way back? Are you going to remember how to do it? Will the water be gone?
Kind of like in horror movies. You never say, I'll be back, because guess what? You're not going to be back.
Thank you, Scream.
I love that movie.
They pass by super tall buildings, and again, Matt's thinking of the usual, there could be treasure inside, but reminds himself, there also might be murder all for all I know. Good job. Not sure you've learned the whole lesson from Mordeth, but it's a reminder he still has holes in his memories as well. So they arrive to the center. This is that, what did you call it? Heart of the city.
The heart.
And in the center of all this dead, because it is described as there was trees once here, but there's just dirt now, is a growing, beautiful, flourishing tree with trefoil leaves. A Vendisora. So, pretty shocking to see it alive and well.
Yeah.
And I really summarize this, so if you want to add any more, but they sit by it for a moment and literally feel the peace, and they're remembering some of the old myths about it, people growing wise by the... what is the other word for it? Tree of life? Tree of...
Avendisora? Why can't I find it?
Wasn't there a nickname of it?
Do we find out here?
No, I don't know. I just thought there was. Maybe I did it in my own head. And Rand is wondering... it was really interesting, thought by Rand, though. He's just thinking to himself, maybe this tree has actually been growing in other places. Like, it hasn't just been in Rhuidean this whole time. And surprisingly, that sounded really reasonable to me.
Yeah?
Why would it have to be in one place? It sounds like a magical tree, in all honesty. Maybe it can magically be in other spots or something. Around this tree are clear glass columns and a giant Tarongriel, which Rand reveals he must enter as part of becoming a clan's chief.
But yes.
He right away denies Matt entry, assuring him, Matt, you'll die, buddy. Just wait. Don't come in. Matt has a moment to disagree and flips a coin but loses. But it seems like Rand's power might have been part of that loss.
It's a lot of fun how it's written. Matt's kind of arguing. He's like, I've come this far, haven't I? I'm not going to turn tail now. And Rand said, it isn't that, Matt. If you go in there, you come out a clan chief or you die, or come out Matt. I don't believe there's any other choice. Unless maybe the wise ones go in there. So anyways, that's when Matt tosses the dice, and of course, it's that one Tarvalen mark. He's like, well, it's getting to be my lucky coin. Flame, I go in with you. Head, I stay out. He flipped the gold coin quickly before Rand could object. Somehow he missed grabbing it. The mark careened off his fingertips, clinked to the pavement, bounced twice, and landed on edge. He glared at Rand accusingly. Do you do this sort of thing on purpose? Can't you control it? No. The coin fell over, showing an ageless woman's face surrounded by stars. It looks like you'd stay out here, Matt.
Ha ha ha.
And Matt's just like, God, I wish you wouldn't use the power around me, you jerk.
Yeah.
Gross.
It is funny.
You have cooties.
It is funny. But it doesn't take Matt long to be grateful he's not going in either.
Exactly. He doesn't want to go in there. And
did they describe the Tarongo? I realize I didn't describe it other than it was big.
The glass columns?
Or it is the glass columns.
Yeah, yeah, okay. there's just
like a bunch of glass columns.
A bunch
columns,
of glass columns and just he walks sticking out right. Them. Yep.
Oh, in between them, I should say.
So he's gonna go
Kay.
In between them.
Like a Stonehenge of glass columns.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, for those of you in Minneapolis who've done the Loppet, they have Icehenge or something where they build ice sculptures.
I've heard about Stonehenge. Icehenge. I've never
So that's actually what I'm picturing, but yeah. It's ice, not clear glass columns. So Ran steps through it and he simply disappears. It's like immediate when he steps in between those columns. Matt's left with his own thoughts, kind of sort of feeling watched by the empty buildings. You know, maybe there's some lingering paranoia since
Shadar Logo.
Yeah. He explores some of the surroundings, and there it is. A twisted red stone doorway. Because I think there were other random objects, right?
Yes.
There's random objects around.
I think there's, if I remember correctly, is there like a something that looks almost like a spear shaft just sticking up straight from the ground with no reason not to fall, but it's not falling. And some other random objects, and it doesn't take him long to realize. And he thinks to himself, light, Tarangriel, portal stone, Druidian. What difference can one more time make? That's after he's been looking at the...
Oh, Matt. Yeah, he inspects the doorway and he thinks it's just like the one in the hold, but he can't remember the details. He does notice three lines around the doorway of tiny triangles with their points down. And I'm thinking, Matt, you did notice the details because you were mocking the one in the Great Hold for not being fancier than a barn door.
Yeah.
Or farm door, and they had straight lines, right? It was just wiggly or straight.
Yeah.
Parallel, I should say, not triangles.
Yeah.
So our fearless hero steps through the
twist. Well, he's looking at him and he's thinking, is it the same? It's the same, right? It looks exactly the same.
And we had heard him say, I'm going to get those snaky people.
Yep.
Oh, Matt.
Yep. Yep. So, yes, you're exactly right. Instead of the wavy lines, it's triangles.
Okay.
Oh,
and so.
So exciting.
Blending light, crushing noise, and entry into not the snaky chamber.
A very long time.
Except it's not a tall, snaky guy. It's a pale man. Very tall, with way too wide shoulders and pointy teeth and pointy ears. Wearing a kilt. Worth mentioning.
I appreciate the kilt.
I appreciate it, too. The chamber looks different, too. I don't think I added too many descriptors.
Hold on. A couple more descriptors about this guy. Pale leather straps studded with silver crisscrossed his arms and bare chest. His eyes were too big and almost colorless, set deep in a narrow-jawed face. His short-cut, paley reddish hair stood up like a brush, and his ears, lying flat against his head, had a hint of a point at the top. He leaned toward Matt, inhaling, opening his mouth to pull in more air, flashing sharp teeth. The impression he gave was of a fox about to leap on a cornered chicken. A very long time.
And as much as I like fox, I kind of almost think them more cat people. I just might. If fox is great, but to me it was a very the pointiness,
like almost like
cats.
A bobcat or leopard.
Lynx maybe. Lynx. You know, they have the tufts in their ears too. So typical questions about remembering the agreement. No weapons, no instruments of music. And then right now I'm just thinking, really, what would happen if someone brought out their recorder and played "Mary Had a Little Lamb"? Like, what is gonna happen to this alternate universe if someone played music? You know.
God, I really want to go grab my kid's recorder and play Mary Had a Little Lamb now.
Maybe on a special episode.
It would probably sound horrible.
So,
if we ever go Patreon, that will be our first episode. Me playing Mary Had a Little Lamb on the recorder.
As done by the foxy people. Matt agrees. I didn't bring anything in. But he is being observant. This guy looks cunning as a fox. So Matt demands to be brought where his questions can be answered or I'm going to leave. And then the man's just like, no! And he begins leading through a chamber.
You must not go. Come. I will take you where you may find what you need. God.
And I'm just thinking, which number of red flag are we on, Matt? Like, you're in trouble deep.
If Matt was a cat, how many lives has he lived so far?
8.5. So, I assume there were a lot gone in back at home in 2 years. So, typical strange physics. Again, I didn't really describe too much of these chambers. I think the coloring was different and everything. But it's almost like they're walking in a circle around the original chamber. And Matt knows this because he keeps seeing the doorway, the twisted doorway in the middle. And their footprints in the dust.
Yep.
So, he keeps seeing their added footprints every time they walk around.
Yep.
But then, magically, they arrive to the end of a very long hallway.
This is a bad acid trip, man.
Yeah.
And this is something to really fuck with your mind. And that's what they're doing. And I think that's what they're doing on purpose. They're fucking with his mind. They're feeding into the paranoia and fear.
Yeah.
Because those are two very strong emotions. And anyways.
And if they have time in the TV show to show it, great. But the reason I can't put details, I think it's really hard for me to picture everything Robert Jordan put into it. He did a great trippy job, and maybe he used something to get there. But it's like Alice through the Looking Glass, you know, Alice in Wonderland. If you read that, it is such a trip that sometimes I had to put it down and just be like, especially as an adult, it's like I just can't think about this for a moment.
I wouldn't be surprised if Robert Jordan
used inspiration.
Enjoyed his recreational hallucinogenics from time to time. That wouldn't shock me.
What were the colors? The one thing that I never wrote down, the colors. The colors were different. I think the snaky one might have been yellow and white.
This
or is that this one?
Well, when they get to the main chamber, it's yellow and white. And I believe that's what the snaky one was as well. Like, the main chamber is...
But the shapes are different.
But I believe the last one was red and white, and I think this one's more of like a... I kind of feel like this one's more of a yellow and white. Maybe I mixed it up. Yeah.
So,
I don't remember.
Matt is getting pissed off. Are we really going to get there? Then suddenly he's like, wait, how did we get to the end of a long hallway? We've been walking in circles. That's all in his mind. So he threatens the foxy man. I will not be cheated. But there's also this moment where he realizes, wait a minute, those leather straps on the man's chest aren't animal hide. They're human hide.
It doesn't specifically say that, but yes, it's very much alluded.
But Matt's doing a good job putting on a show of like, and that's when fluffing his feathers, right? He's like, you won't get me.
Yep, that's when he says, lead, you son of a goat. Your hide is not worth silver studding. Take me to where I want to go.
Oy vey. But here it is. Here's the new chamber. He doesn't see any people to talk to, but boom. 8 foxy folks are on top of a pedestal at the end of each star point. Okay, so this one did have a giant star in the middle.
Yep.
Was it like an 8-pointed star, 12-pointed star or something?
Yep.
So every point of the star had a pedestal at the end, and now suddenly when he looked away and looked back, there's tall foxy people on top of each one. So that's pretty remarkable. Are fox known to jump high? I'm just curious. Are these people coming out and just jumping up? The snaky people were also good, but I felt like that's snaky-ish.
Snakes can jump, or snakes can crawl real fast.
Or
yeah.
Slither, whatever.
Slither up. I don't know. Are these really foxes, or do they just remind him of foxes?
Cats,
you know what I mean?
Jump.
Okay. I get where you're coming from.
So, a femaleish person asks Matt, by the ancient treaty, here is agreement made. What is your need? Speak. And Matt begins asking question after question. You know, tell me about the Daughter of the Nine Moons. What does it mean for me to die and live again and give up half the light of the world? And they just keep ignoring him, and they really don't look friendly. That's a big part of
this. Yeah.
So he starts demanding things, and all of a sudden they'll just say, granted.
Yeah. No, let's go into it real fast. You are supposed to answer. Burn your bones to ash. Answer me. Who is the Daughter of the Nine Moons, and why do I have to marry her? How will I die and live again? What does it mean that I have to give up half the light of the world? Those are my 3 questions. Say something. Dead silence. He could hear himself breathing, hear the blood throbbing in his ears. I have no intention of marrying, and I have no intention of dying either, whether I'm supposed to live again or not. I walk around with holes in my memory, holes in my life, and you stare at me like idiots. If I had my way, I would want those holes filled, but at least answers to my questions might fill some in my future. You have to answer. Done. One of the men growled, and Matt blinked. Done? What was done? What did he mean? Burn your eyes, he muttered. Burn your souls, you are as bad as Aes Sedai. Well, I want a way to be free of Aes Sedai and the power, and I want to be away from you and back to Iridian. If you will not answer me, open the door and let me done, another man said, and one of the women echoed, done. Matt scanned the walls, then glared, turning to take them all in, standing up there on the pedestal, staring down at him. Done. What is done? I see no door. You lying goat-fathered fool, a woman said in a whispered growl, and the others repeated it. Fool, 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 wise to ask leave-taking when you set no price, no terms, yet fool not to first agree on price. We will set the price. They spoke so quickly you could not tell which said what. What was asked will be given. The price will be paid. Burn you, he shouted. What are you talking? Utter darkness closed around him. There was something around his throat. He could not breathe air. He could not...
Dot, dot, dot. End of scene.
Sorry, just I didn't mean that. To read all of that, but that was just really intense.
Well, you went into it. It is your favorite character.
And this is actually this actually is one of my favorite scenes in this book. I really enjoy this.
So Matt, I don't know, eat your words, Matt. You wanted to get the snaky people, but you ended up in the fox den or whatever.
Okay, so we need to touch on it just real quick. Answering questions, they are granting wishes essentially. Yeah.
Pretty much. Which we know never mess with a genie. It doesn't go well.
So what were his wishes?
If I had my way, I would have my holes filled. So he wishes for his memory to be brought back.
Yep.
From Shadar Logoth and the Mordith crap.
Yep.
I want a way to be free of Aes Sedai and the power. So that's interesting because that might relieve him of Rand in some way, shape, or form. Because Rand symbolizes the power as well. So maybe he's about to go on a separate journey sometime soon.
Yes.
Then I want to be away from you and back in Iridian. And that's where they were like, good thing you wish to go back.
Yeah.
So that's creepy.
That was smart of you to make sure you included getting out of here, but you didn't set a price.
And then who knew? What genie asks you to set a price? They just do some wish that backfires on you like the monkey's paw, right? So, technically speaking, we don't know what the price is, but there's something going around his neck, and it's getting dark, so it doesn't sound good. It sounds like it's his life.
It's probably his life, but we also know that he is going to die and live again.
I know. So
is this where that happens?
One would hope so. If he's really going to die, we'd hope he'd live. Otherwise, this would be the end of Matt, and no one will ever know.
Yeah. Would you be happy if they ended Matt's character right now?
No.
I'm just curious.
There's too much to go. And who's going to blow the horn?
That's true. Okay. I love it.
Where is the horn right now? Is it in Tar Valon?
I believe it's still in Tar Valon.
Can you imagine if suddenly anyone could blow it? I wonder who would pick, probably like Varen. She'd just be like, oh, fine, I'll take it over.
Really? You think Varen would want to blow the horn?
No, it's just a great picture.
I mean... Sure. Okay.
So this is a fun chapter, but I also feel like we don't need to take much time on foxy people. Like, it's like the snaky people.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's another dimension where there was some agreement made in the past.
But
they don't necessarily like serving humans either.
It's a very related chapter, right, to the one that happened in the Stone of Tyr. A lot of similarities, but enough nuanced differences to make it interesting as well. The foxy people, as opposed to the snaky people, are pretty, they're pretty creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, the snaky people were pretty creepy. The foxy people were...
Foxy people are more aggressive.
Yeah, well, yeah.
More predatorial.
It seemed to me, I think, in my first read, where the snaky people were more, like, prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
And the Foxy people were more of like the soldieress type characters, right? Like they that were the warriors. Sense. You know, the way they were garbed was more of like a warrior type garb than the Snakey people were.
You know what? And also, it's almost, I was just thinking in sets of threes, past, present, future. Snakey people are more future. Foxy were more present. So we get a third doorway that might be past.
Oh, okay.
IDK.
I
hope Matt doesn't go through it. He might not live again.
But if there was a third doorway, who else would go through it? I'm just saying.
Well, the first time there was Maureen and Rand, but they weren't desperate to go through it again.
No, yeah, that's true.
This is Matt's ire against Snakey people.
All right. Well, yeah,
that's Matt's life.
We got that done, and now Matt is swinging. And now we need to check.
What's happening
to now him. We need to check in on our
Harold
Rand.
Chapter 25: The Road to the Spear. So we backtrack right into Rand's perspective as he's walking through the thick glass columns without hesitation, and then he looks around, feeling cooler air and goosebumps, not necessarily from the change in weather. He spies ahead of him one man standing very stiff, and he deduces this to be Muradin,
yep.
Cooladin's brother. Rand notes that something's going on for Muradin, even though he's not moving, and his face looks like it's on the brink of a snarl, so he's struggling or something. Then Rand is surprised that neither Matt nor himself didn't see Muradin enter for how little distance he is from the entrance.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Rand, he's not that far in. And this is great. Rand takes another step. And suddenly he's in a body that's not his body. It's like a pensive moment from Harry Potter when they look at other people's memories. What is going to happen for the next two chapters?
Sure.
Because right now Rand is a man called Mandine, a 40-year-old sept chief, talking to his wife, Sialdra, staring through the clear view of the half-built city of Ruidian and thinking it madness that it is a place that cannot be defended. Interesting thought about no one wanting to attack the Gen Aiel, who are avoided as much as the Lost Ones who go about searching for the song. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, that sounds like the Tinkers.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So it continues on Mandine's story. He's observing the Gen carrying two Aes Sedai and Pelicans. Sialdra talks to him again, insisting, you gotta do whatever they ask. And this is referred back to a chat with the Wise Ones.
Yeah.
In which the men who do not come will find their septs non-existent within three generations. There's little context to any of this, by the way. I'm just repeating what I learned in this memory.
Yeah.
Mandine and men sneak toward the procession, and at one point Mandine stops his men and proceeds alone, but he's also fretting he will also die because there's numerous other men joining him sneaking down the mountain. So this must be different septs coming to fulfill this.
Yeah,
meet the Aes Sedai.
And there are septs that have, I mean, we already know about, like, we already kind of know about blood feuds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there are men among these warriors who are approaching Ruidian. They, like, there are many of them among them. He doesn't know if they'll try to kill him or not.
Right, but he has a comforting thought. Well, no one will kill in front of a Gen. That's interesting, because I thought all Aiel were warriors, right? I mean, this is okay, we're getting some history lessons. And he's wondering if anyone knows that Comran is his great father, and that Comran was one that found an Ogier steading and began trade. And Comran's great father, Roderick, led the Aiel to kill men in iron shirts who crossed the dragon wall. And I'm just thinking, okay, Mandine, so you must be important or something.
Yeah, I mean, he is a sept chief or a clan chief.
Yeah, well, sept chief. They don't use the word clan quite yet. Mandine feels chosen by the Paz Aes Sedai just based on them staring at him. So he steps forward. And the Gen names himself Dorman and introduces the Aes Sedai as Mordain and Nerissa. Mandine learns they want him and other leaders to come to Ruidian and learn why they do not carry swords. Charmdeen.
So he asks, why do you not carry a sword? And Mandine responds, "It is forbidden. Even Jen should know that." He lifted his spears, touched the knife at his waist and the bow at his back. "These are weapons enough for a warrior." The mutters became approving, including some from men who had sworn to kill him. They still would, given the chance, but they approved of what he had said, and they seemed content to let him talk.
And then Sharandine, one of Mandine's enemies, pushes forward to ask if whichever of the men go to Rydian will lead the Aiel.
Yeah.
And the brown-eyed Aes Sedai answers, "No!" And repeats what readers already know to be the dragon prophecy.
Yep.
We've been watching Rand fulfill. Sharandine continues bickering about this being a trick. I wonder if he's related to Cooladine. Know what I mean? But the Aes Sedai peacefully tell him there will be a day the Jenn are no more, and the others must remember the Aiel.
So let's go through that prophecy real fast. The stone that never falls will fall to announce his coming.
Happened.
Of the blood, but not raised by the blood, he will come from Ruidian at dawn.
Hasn't happened quite yet. Half of that has happened.
And tie you together with bonds you cannot break. He will take you back and he will destroy you.
And that's what's scaring people.
Okay.
Okay. So.
So anyways, they say we seek no control. Our days dwindle. The end of the Jenn are imminent.
Yeah, and that stood out to me on second read through because, you know, then I was closer about hearing Moraine interpreting what does Jenn Aiel mean? The only Aiel? So that's really interesting because the end comment is others must remember the Aiel after they predicted the Jenn will be no more. Yeah. So there's something to what Moraine has learned.
Well, and the Aiel means dedicated. So does the Jenn mean the true dedicated the only true dedicated, right?
And then they're gone. So Mandine suddenly has a change of heart. It's like the Grinch's heart growing too big. And he just agrees, yeah, I'll go with the Jenn Aiel. He puts down his weapons right then. And Durmin, because Durmin said weapons are forbidden. And Mandine just laughs and he's like, take me to Ruidian. And I'm thinking that's how clans are formed and how they began calling themselves Aiel, maybe?
Okay.
Of the non-Jenn Aiel. Because he's going to go into Ruidian. We've already learned you don't become a clan chief till you go to Ruidian. So that's why I'm like...
Well, because there's so much that they've forgotten. They need to remember. We skipped over a couple quotes that I had highlighted.
Go ahead and read them. Because there's a lot for just me real to keep
quick,
writing.
Just real quick. After Dorman had asked him, why do you not carry swords? Mordain has said, you do not know why. And Narissa added, there's too much you do not know. You must know. And that's what they need to do. Whoever would lead among you must come to Ruidian and learn where we came from and why we do not carry swords. Who cannot learn will not live. And I always wanted to find that college out there that their motto was, who cannot learn will not live.
And we support diversity of all. And Rand's back in his own body, still remembering feeling he was Mandine, then wondering whether or not Jenn were Aiel, as they had no weapons beyond their belt knives. And everyone knows Aiel carry weapons.
Yeah.
Rand observes he is further in the glass columns than one step could account for. And finds himself a bit closer to Mirrodin, who now has a dire frown. Rand takes another step. Now he's 20-year-old Roderick. I think that was Mandine's grandpa.
Yep, it was.
With white-haired Giordum, Roderick's great-father.
Yep.
The Aiel folks are following the Jenn with their full wagons. Roderick's group is filling water from a full stream when he's approached by a man on a horse. This man is Garum. Jarum? Do you have a preference?
It's a Garum.
And Garum assures him, yep, my dad gave permission. You guys can keep filling your water. We have a strong spring in town. Again, it's like, wait a minute, the Aiel are known for no water. Okay. Garum asks if the Jenn people are the same as Roderick's, in which Roderick explains, I'm Aiel, but they're Jenn Aiel. Indicating a difference, even though he didn't understand
himself. He doesn't really understand the difference.
Giordum approaches quietly and asks which way they moved, which Garum answers, across the spine of the world. Jordan does not seem to be a fan.
Okay. Oh. Okay, so we need to do a quick map time.
Okay.
This is the spine of the world.
Okay.
So they have, so this group has not crossed the spine of the world yet.
Okay.
So who do you think, what countryman do you think they're talking to right now?
A Carianian.
The Carianian are giving them water.
Sure.
And he says in there, so keep...
Because wasn't there a gift from a Carianian about the tree as a gift, and then he cut it
for
down?
For sharing water.
Loman's sick sin.
Yes, so the Aiel gave the tree to the Carianian because they shared water. Because he says right here, most people don't give us water.
Yeah.
Like, this is, most people just chase us off. Or kill us.
I see.
Or rob us.
Okay. So this is important. So Garam is probably Carianian. Maybe Moraine's great.
Maybe it's Garen Damondred?
Oh, I don't remember. I remember Damondred. I couldn't tell you his name.
Well, what I'm saying is maybe Garen is Garen Damondred. Yes. I'm just saying, maybe. Okay. Who knows?
So Garam asks... Wait. Actually, I think there's another point.
Sorry, I kind of sidetracked us there.
Okay.
Like I do.
So Garam cannot actually answer what lies on the other side of the mountains, and he just changes topic to the Aes Sedai the Djinn have with them. So, nice political move.
Yep.
Interesting thoughts from Roderick about the stories. The Aiel had at some point failed the Aes Sedai, and it's something no one quite knows how. But the Aes Sedai must know, as they rarely leave the wagons and look so sad. It's just a really sad thought. Jerodam answers, "We guard the Djinn. It is they who travel with Aes Sedai."
Yes.
Garam gives his own interesting answer that his father has an Aes Sedai advisor, not that he would tell anyone, and she says the dry rivers will run again and we will build a great city beside one. So originally I thought that was Rudian, but now that we're in Carian, he's talking about that one city? Caemlyn? No.
Yeah.
What was the city Damondred was in?
Kyrian.
Oh, the city was Kyrian?
Yeah. It's a city, Kyrian, and the country of Kyrian.
Oh.
Yeah.
Got it.
No, I think they're looking for places to settle down. I think they're looking for Rudian.
Oh, okay. So that was more referring to the Aes Sedai. Okay. Garam frets about the Aes Sedai ruling the world again and thinking they should kill them before the Aes Sedai destroy people again. Okay, so that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
Not prejudice. Jerodam changes topic this time about readying his people to cross the mountains, and Garam looks really disappointed to not have help killing the Aes Sedai. And he just says, "The spine of the world is also called the Dragon Wall." And then I was just thinking, does that mean Dragon Wall to keep the dragon in or out? Personal thought.
I don't know.
And Roderick is thinking, it's a fitting name for Aiel. And we learn here, Aiel secretly call themselves People of the Dragon, which was only spoken aloud when they received their spears. He thinks there are always people to fight between Aiel, Djinn, and enemies. But interesting, People of the Dragon, we've heard of it just because back in the stone, it came up in conversation,
yes.
Clearly.
Yes, with Ruark, yes.
Yeah, but now we
are the People of the Dragon.
Yeah, but now we know it's also a secret at one point because, you know, the dragon went crazy and killed people.
Yes.
Any other thoughts on that section before we're back in Randland?
Nope.
So we're in Randland again.
We skimmed a lot, but we've got to
skim somewhere. He's taking in a breath as though he has not breathed for a while, and he's even closer in distance to Mirrodin. He's still hearing the words echoing in his mind about Aiel, Djinn, and enemies, feeling he had seen and lived a time before the Aiel came to their threefold land.
Yeah.
Aha.
Yeah, they hadn't gotten there yet.
Aha. Note, Mirrodin's eyes shifted uneasily, and he seemed to struggle against taking another step. Ran moves forward. Back to Jordan, only is 18 years old and crouched in the snow and cold as 5 Djinn approach. He calls out, "You have need of us, Djinn?" And a man shouts back, "You name us that to mock us, but it is true. We are the only true Aiel. You have given up the way."
You have forsaken the way.
Ah. We got more to learn, don't we? Also, I think it's worthy to know, I was thinking this before I didn't say it, but we're doing history backward, right?
Yeah.
And this chapter like blew my mind the first read through.
It's still hard for me to it's still a
So you're taking American history and you're starting in the 2020s, but you got to be able to connect all the knowledge by the time you get to, you know, 1492. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that works.
So Jordan becomes defensive, calling it a lie and saying he's never held a sword. So there's something about the way and not holding swords right here, but yeah. We don't quite know all of it. Jordan then asks if they are lost and points to their camp, and they shake their heads, and he asks them to follow him to his father's camp. And he knows this happens sometimes where they'll leave their apparently more peaceful, whatever segregated gen camp.
Yeah.
Jordan's father, Lewin, comes out of the tent. And the yellow-haired woman of the Gen, whose name is Morin, told a story of the Gen trading with a village, only to have villagers come back at night and take back what they traded, along with murdering and kidnapping, including Morin's 5-year-old daughter, Kirin.
The dead were listed: fathers, a mother, first brothers, the captives, first sisters, a sister mother, and a daughter. That last surprised Jordan. It was Morin who spoke bitterly of a 5-year-old daughter carried off to be raised by some other woman. Studying her more closely, he mentally added a few years to her age.
Hmm. Is she an Aes Sedai or something? You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Also, interesting note, Jordan is disdainful that these Gen trust people just because they have houses.
Yeah.
I skipped this, but I'm pretty sure either Roderick or Mandine had a similar thought about never trusting someone in a house.
Yep.
So we're definitely learning.
It was Roderick when he was talking to Garen, I believe.
They're having a pattern of learned customs, and we're unfolding them in this whole journey through the Tarangriel.
So Lewin says to the group, "You may stay with us if you wish, so long as you are willing to defend yourself and the rest of us. If you stay, you will never be allowed back among the wagons." The sharp-nosed fellow turned at that and hurried back the way they had come. It was seldom that only one left at this point. "Those who wish to come with us to this village, take a spear. But remember, if you take the spear to use against men, you will have to stay with us. You will be dead as far as the Gen are concerned." Everybody.
And they all take up the spear. Everybody does it. Including Morin.
Including Morin. And that's when Lewin says, "You do not have to take the spear just to stay, or for us to bring you back your people. Taking the spear means willingness to fight, not just to defend yourself. You can put it down. There is no shame. They have my daughter." To Jordan's shock, Lewin barely paused before nodding. "There's a first time for all things."
Hey, first maiden of the spear.
First maiden of the fucking spear! I love it.
And Morin, I appreciate, though, she does go into, "My husband is already mourning my daughter, but he cares more about the trees than the girl."
Yep.
And we're going to get back to that. But, well, she does go in a bit. There's 3 saplings from the Tree of Life. Yeah, there it is. Evandisora's Tree of Life. That are to be planted when they find a place of safety. And so she calls the spear her husband.
"This is my husband now.
Maiden of the spear.
Maiden of the spear, wed to the spear." I love it. It's, okay.
Jordan hacks down her spear and gives her a few lessons.
Yeah, he's realizing it's too long, right? Yeah. So he takes a couple feet off, brings it down to about 4 feet, including the foot-long point.
And I think he might even give her clothes because her dresses are no good.
Yes.
It'll get caught up.
Yes. He gives her, that's what is known as the cat and sword now, right? The
outfit.
Loose-ish fitting, drab colored clothing that fits into any landscape.
And as he's giving her lessons, he thinks to himself how much easier it is to maneuver a short weapon, which makes me think, oh no, it's going to become a sword sometime, or I don't know, maybe it's just about the knives.
No.
But
the Aiel are known for their short spears.
Oh, okay.
This was the creation of the short spear.
I never connected that their
before
spears were
this,
any different.
Yeah, no, before this, they were the long spears. This was the first time that anybody created a short spear, and he realized how much more dexterity there was with it.
And he barely hears Morin say that she had seen his face in a dream. So she's probably a dreamer as well, which connects to a possible... She's not an Aes Sedai, but it's that whole wise one power-ish, right?
Well, we do know from the last chapter, or from a couple chapters ago, that you don't necessarily have to be a able to wield the power to be a dreamer.
That's right.
But
she has an angel's face, right?
But the ones that do wield the power tend to be the more powerful dreamers.
Interesting. Only we're back in Randland, so anything else from Jordam's section? Young Jordam, I should say.
Nope.
I think that was the big one. We found the Maiden of the Spear.
Yep. Just the very end of it. When she says, "I saw your face in a dream." After she says, "This is my husband now," she says, "If someone stole your child, would you talk of the way of the leaf and suffering sent to test us?" He shook his head, and she thought, and she said, "I thought not. You will make a fine father. Teach me to use this spear."
And I've also been thinking, as you keep going through, obviously, the heritage, Roderick, Jordam, Lewin, stuff next.
Yeah.
Is this Rand's heritage?
Okay.
Only we're back in Randland. Only a pace or two behind Muradin, who is now snarling and clearly struggling, although not moving, right? Whenever he looks, can be in the present, in the glass columns. It's not necessarily that they're moving much, maybe some facial expressions.
Yep.
Rand recognizes right now, the columns are taking me back through the time, long lost history of the Aiel. And then he takes another step forward and back in time. We're back in time with young Lewin and friends, and he did name them Lunca, Girin, Charlin, Elijah.
Yep.
Huddled in the cold with their dust veils, which I'm assuming, hey, that's what must become Shufaz.
Yep.
They're lurking in the dark because they want to get their sisters back who had just been kidnapped. Lewin's family, including his great father Aiden, mourned when they realized the girls were taken, but also just got up, ready to go on as they always do. Aiden muttering about keeping faith with the Aes Sedai, whom Lewin has never seen, and Aiden also trying to keep the Aiel alive as a people. Not necessarily thinking of Lewin's sister Migraine. Head, it looks like Migraine. And Charlin's sister Colleen. Those are two of the kidnapped.
Yep.
Okay, so the boys approach the bandits in the night, and Lewin tells Magrin to run, but she only stares blankly through a bruised face. So something bad happened.
Yeah, so they sneak in there and they find the girls, Migraine is.
Yeah, it's nighttime. They wake her up, but she's just a zombie.
Yeah, she's probably already experienced horrible trauma, right?
Yeah, a lot of rape.
Yeah.
I'm positive. A man wakes up threatening to carve him like a pig, and at this point, Colleen is also awake, but just hiding under her dirty blanket. And Migraine is still in this trance. So, yeah, they are in shock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible abuse for just being kidnapped and already being trained to not do anything. Charlin jumps on the back of the attacking man from behind, and a different man slashes at Charlin with a sword. Lewin takes the heavy kettle by the handle, swings it at the man, who falls down. Another man approaches him. Lewin reaches for anything, because I think he's crab walking on the ground. He had fallen.
Yeah.
And anything he can find, and so he thinks he has a stick. He jabs it at the man, only it's not a stick, it's a spear. The man drops his sword, blood pouring from his mouth. All the fellows are in shock as they realize they killed all the bandits. Luca's praying for mercy. Lewin crawls over to Charlin, who's in the midst of dying from his chest wound. Lewin decides, no, we're going to take the girls back to the wagons. Let's gather useful items for our family. So they made, I guess they were probably plundered. So here's some cook pots and knives.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the fifth. They took the fifth of the plunder.
Oh, yeah.
From their, well, what do you call it?
The people they conquered?
The people they conquered.
Yeah.
But Lewin won't let them bring swords because they're weapons. But the guys are kind of like, what the hell? We just killed them.
What are you doing with spear? And he's like, a spear can put food on our table. A spear can kill a boar. Oh. A spear can kill a squirrel. A sword can only kill a human.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there are people out there who have killed deer with swords, but...
Not by now. I would agree.
I'm sure there's been a challenge out there, right?
So this is not good. They return to camp with the girls, who are still quiet and bruised and in shock. and we don't know what assault, and Lewin doesn't really fully understand this either. Like, why aren't we all excited? And he knows he and his buds are kind of like, oh, we just did a bad thing.
Yeah, but they rescued the girls.
They did, and they approach the camp. Aiden comes out along with Noreen, Colleen's mother, and Sarah Lynn, Lewis, and Magreen's mother. So sorry, Magreen. You got a bad
name.
Let's
call her Maygran.
Maygran. Maygran spills the beans. The boys killed her captors. Like, the first thing she says is putting her brother under the bus. I mean, he did. But
they took us, they hurt us, and these guys came and they killed them.
So Sarah Lynn doesn't believe her at first, but Elijah confirms that the bad guys were trying to kill us, and they murdered Charlin. Aiden is flabbergasted that the boys went against the Covenant, which is to harm no one.
Yeah.
And there is no reason good enough to justify killing another human. Boom, we have the Way of the Leaf from the Tinkers, right?
Sure.
Are they a stem of the original dedicated Aiel?
So Lewin says, Mother, and flinched when she looked back at him with cold eyes. Mother, please, who are you that addresses me so? Hide your face from me, stranger. I had a son once with a face like that. I do not wish to see it on a killer. That's fucking cold.
It's cold.
That's...
And there's a lot, because now, of course, you know, we can start connecting. We're learning history backward. Well, Lewin was the one that Jen approached about, my daughter was kidnapped, and you knew.
Yeah.
Like, now we know.
Yeah.
Oh, his heart went right back to his sister.
Yeah. And Lewin is just like, just so you know, this is the way it is. If you join us, you cannot join. But he stayed near the wagons to protect them.
Yeah, we're with them, not of them. And back then, Lewin is shouting, I'm still Aiel, I'm Aiel. And I'm thinking, oh, the confusion between the Jen and the Aiel, here we are. So the
true
Jen.
Aiel versus just the Aiel. So they're dedicated.
Nuts.
But the dedication gets skewed.
Yes. And we're back in Ranland. He's feeling the pain of Lewin's loss, understanding that Lewin had not carried a weapon or understood what he was doing, and he was terrified to be killing. Rand's now nearly side by side with Mirrodin, who does not appear aware of Rand. Mirrodin's snarl is a rictus. Sweat beating down his face, appearing like he wanted to run. Rand steps forward and back.
That's the end of the chapter. So let's talk about this for just a second. It seems like there is this belief that the Aiel come from a storied history of, you know, warriorship and conquering and you know, ultimate strength. Although they do know that they were sent to the Threefold Land for punishment. And they do know that it has something to do with angering or letting down the Aes Sedai.
Yes.
So now we're finding out, like, all of the different paths that took place over thousands of years that led to where they are now.
Yes.
And it's fascinating and confusing.
It is. You almost, like, for a first-time reader, I did go back and read it again because I was like, now I need to make sense of this.
Yep.
Who was our first back in time? It was Mandine.
Yes.
How many years ago do you think Mandine was from Rand? Like, 500?
We know that... I'm pretty sure we know that the Aiel crossed the Dragon Wall several hundred, if not 1,000 years ago.
Oofta.
So we went back real far. And then shortened the pace a little bit, right? The very first point of view we have was hundreds and hundreds of years ago, probably at least 700 to 800 years ago. I don't have the companion. I'm not like one of those people that searches the wiki a lot, so I couldn't tell you the exact time, but it was hundreds of years ago that the Aiel first crossed the Dragon Wall. And I guess that was the second perspective. First perspective was Mandine.
Already,
they were already in the Waste.
And they're at Ruidian. They're building Ruidian. Basically.
And that would probably because we did meet... we didn't actually meet Mandine's ancestor, but he thought about him, right? What was his name? Gareth or...
His great-father?
Well, who is the... Roderick.
Roderick.
Roderick was the next perspective.
Right.
And Roderick was like,
I think Comrin's great father. So that would be Mandian's great grandfather. Yeah. Okay. So there's a big jump right there.
Yeah. So he probably never knew Roderick. He had just heard of him. So then we jump into Roderick. But then Roderick's father.
And then it goes father by father almost.
And then, or grandfather. Yep, grandfather.
Okay. It's a lot.
But yeah. So we jump back probably a good 600 to 700 years, then drop back another probably 100 to 200 years, and then from there probably shortened a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But still a long time. So yeah.
This was a big chunk.
It is.
And I said maybe we should just leave it suspenseful right here before we go into the next chunk.
And then next week just do the...
Just embrace what Bran sees.
Just do the dedicated as one chapter. I'm good with that. So yeah.
But then we have to come up with a fuck, marry, kill. There's options.
There's a lot of options.
That's probably the problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
Okay, I think I can do a kill. Oh man, too many options. I might be overwhelmed right now.
God, this is a really hard one. This is a really hard one, because... Okay, I am going to... Fuck Lewin.
Yeah.
He seems like a badass. Did I steal yours?
No, all right. I support it, though. He would be up there.
Yeah, I'll fuck Lewin, because he is a badass... He's the one that was leading the party that first killed people and broke away from
the Gen,
Aiel. And then he, was the leader when the first Maiden of the Spear came about.
Which is badass.
Yeah. Which is badass. I will marry Morin, even though she only marries... Spears.
Yeah, she's gonna say no to you.
I'm a skinny guy. I can become a spear. Yeah, just put a pointy hat on me and. weird. You're weird. And then I will kill. Gross bearded guy that tries to kill, Lewin.
Yeah, and I'd say all three of those would have easily been some of my choices as well.
Yeah.
But I can find other ones.
Actually, no. Can I change my kill, or is it too late?
It's not too late.
I'm gonna kill the creepy foxy guy with the
That's
pale leather studded. Yeah. He was actually my original kill, and then I just got all wrapped up into Lewin and Morin's story that I forgot. But yeah, so I'm killing the foxy guide.
It's a tough one. There's a ton of characters that are all relatively on the same par.
Yeah.
Is more how I would describe it.
Yeah.
So perhaps I've got a kill in mind, and Morin was a good choice. I do want to say that. She's kind of a standout. So maybe I'll just give the fuck to Morin.
I think another good choice for, and one that I thought about for either a fuck or a marry, was the guy that gave Juardin water, Garam.
Oh.
He seemed like a cool guy.
He seemed like a douche to me. I thought he was kind of like a, I'm so good.
Well, he realizes that these people are downtrodden people, and most people just shit on them, right? And he doesn't. Yeah. Although he does think that he's being charitable. Okay, that's a fair interpretation.
But I'm not going to kill him for that either. So I would say Morin for fuck, just because she's pretty cool. I mean, we got a hint. She's not cool. Just the first Maid of the Spear, but possibly she's the first dreamer we've met. It definitely seems she's a dreamer.
So possibly not only is she the first Maiden of the Spear, but maybe she's the first wise one as well.
She might become a wise one if she gives it up. So that's where I'm a little like, would the first Maiden be the first to also give it up?
Yeah, maybe.
Mary, I would say most of these guys are pretty on par with each other. It's interesting to see them as kids when you get the kid view and the adult view.
Yep.
So, I guess I'll do Mandine just because he was willing to give up. He just had that change of heart. He gave up his weapon. He's like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Take me to Viridian. I'm cool. It seems like he listened to his wife, who was like, you gotta do what they say. Like, you're gonna kill us all if you don't. And he respected that, even though this sounds so stupid to him.
Oh, yeah.
And then the kill is actually going to be Luwin's mom for rejecting him just like that. Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
woman, it's your son, and you just gave him the cruelest goodbye ever. Ever. Nope.
That's fair.
And sure, we might know why, but she's dead to me. Huh.
Who is this face that is scorning your son because he rescued your daughter? You are not my mother. That's what I was would have said. Damn it. Anyways, with that,
you guys have to hang out and wait for the rest of the story.
Yeah, yeah. So, we're gonna do it right now, but you guys will find out about it next week.
In the meantime, everyone be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Glee Man's Apprentice.
The Glee Man's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.